Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. People have been renting out homes on the Cape and Islands for decades. We've all heard of the summer shuffle, people moving out of a rental house for the summer and moving back in after Labor Day. But the rental landscape is undergoing significant changes, and many communities are sounding the alarm about the increasing number of short-term rental properties. We invited a roundtable of journalists to shed some light on the short-term rental debate in different communities on the Cape and Islands. Joining us is Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Mindy.
Paul Benson from the Provincetown Independent. Hi, Paul. Paul, can you hear me? We'll come back to Paul.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Sam Houghton from the Martha's Vineyard Times. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Mindy.
And Josh Balling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
All right, listeners, we're also interested in your thoughts about short-term rentals in your community. You can join the conversation at 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. First, let's talk a little bit about how short-term rentals are different from the seasonal rental business that's been part of the Cape and Islands economy for decades. Tim, you want to talk a little bit about that and get us started?
Well, I think the difference in recent years is that a lot of these short-term rentals are either being, the homes are owned by absentee owners or corporations in some cases. And a lot of them have started, really since before the pandemic, but the internet has made a big difference in bringing in Airbnb and Vrbo and other types of sort of national websites where you can go and you can find a rental almost anywhere. And people realize that, there's money to be made here. Mm-hmm. So I think it's gone from being something that sort of local residents do to help make ends meet during the summer to big business, really.
Yeah. Anybody want to add anything to that?
I would say, I think, too, that it's sort of defined as well simply by the term short term. Short-term rentals are officially defined as any rental of a property of less than a month, but conventionally, I think we're talking about weeks, sometimes weekend, sometimes a single night. And like Tim said, the online platforms have really allowed that to move forward quickly. A homeowner can put their home up on Airbnb or VRBO and rent it out for a single night. And with a couple of clicks of a keystroke, have the money in their bank account and not have to worry about it anymore. What we see on Nantucket, too, is certainly the absentee homeowner in at least one or two corporations. But we have a lot of homeowners who have every intent of perhaps retiring to their homes or spending a couple weeks in their homes on Nantucket, but they're still working. They haven't retired yet. And the cost of real estate is so high here that even if they're relatively well off, and they kind of have to be to afford a vacation home on Nantucket, they need that rental income to make up the difference. So they might rent it out for 6 or 7 weeks in the summer and only stay in it for 2 weeks. Mm.
Is there evidence that the private investors or corporations are buying up property for use as rentals? Is anybody seeing that?
I can jump in on that one on Nantucket especially. It's one of our biggest concerns among everybody who has concerns about short-term rentals out here. And it's really one of the only places in the entire debate where there's been any type of consensus. The Copley Group, the Boston real estate company, that owns dozens of apartment buildings throughout the city, many of which provide student housing, at one point owned 14 short-term rental properties on Nantucket. Now it owns 12, but in light of a recent town meeting vote to ban corporate ownership on Nantucket, it's put 10 of them on the market. So one of the few places that Nantucket has begun to regulate short-term rentals, outside of just trying to get a handle on the issue, is banning corporate ownership of short-term rental properties.
Do we know in the... Go ahead, Tim.
We've seen a little bit of that down this end of the Cape as well. And one of the issues that's been highlighted is share ownership of homes. Homes are so expensive now. There are a few cases where people have bought shares, like almost time-sharing type things, but those homes are rented out as short-term rentals and everybody shares in the profits. I think there's some fear that that's going to escalate given the money involved here.
Yeah.
That corporate ownership ban on Nantucket has actually addresses that as well. It was a loophole in our ban that already existed on future timeshares, as it did ban fractional ownership of homes, moving properties moving forward.
So what are some of the concerns people have with private investors or corporations running rentals? Sam, what are they upset about?
Yeah, I think anecdotally we see on the Vineyard, you go into what, maybe in West Tisbury, what was, a nice neighborhood over the summer. There's a lot of activity. People are out and about. and then you go back in the winter, and as people say, the lights are out. So essentially, some corporations, that's a big word, but you could also say just someone who owns several properties on the island. They might even be from the island, but they will own several properties with the intention of using as short-term rentals, and they don't rent them out in the winter. So you're essentially taking them off the market for a year-round islander.
Yeah. Paul, you want to add anything?
Yeah, Provincetown passed a ban on corporate ownership and also limited them to two per owner. So you have to name your human owners in Provincetown. That bylaw was just finally approved by the Attorney General in the spring. And then every owner can only have two. So that bylaw was then taken up and passed, I believe, in East Ham and in Truro in the last couple months. And it's sort of aimed at the same idea that even if it's, you know, say a B corporation or some, you know, there's a few kinds of corporate ownership that are allowed, LLCs, if you name your human owners, but they still are just seeking to limit the accumulation of a bunch of rental property in the hands of people who are strictly in it for business, as opposed to this will be my retirement home someday.
Yeah. And just looking at the numbers, the Cape has nearly 18,000 short-term rentals on the market this summer, a 12% increase from April last year, a nearly 50% increase from March of 2021. That's according to the Massachusetts Department of Revenue and the Cape Cod Commission. The islands don't have as many hotels, motels, and rentals as the Cape. A state database lists around 4,000 short-term rentals on the Vineyard, though it doesn't include properties rented 14 nights or less, and just over 3,000 on Nantucket. Do those numbers sound right to you all?
For the time, so we actually look into the story on what is the actual number, and it's really hard to know. I mean, even a state database is conflicting with what locals, you know, in the towns think there are. So I think that's one of the reasons why these regulations are coming about, just one of the reasons, but why local regulations are coming about, so you can get a sense of how many are. Okay. If you think 4,000 on the Vineyard, that's a lot.
Yeah. Anybody else want to chime in on that?
Well, I'd say that our town officials and we at the Inquirer and Mirror, too, have looked into this a little bit, and we think the state estimate's on the low end. We really think here on Nantucket, which is even smaller than the Vineyard, probably has 3,500 to 4,000 mm-hmm. short-term rental properties. Doesn't mean they're all available all the time, but when you consider our local registration database and the state database, it's a lot closer to 4,000 than it is to 3,000. And like as Sam said, that's a lot for a small mm-hmm. island.
Yeah,
I think on this end of the Cape, we're seeing a lag in the local registration in the towns that have them. I agree with the other folks here that the state database is not accurate. It's woefully underestimating the numbers. But when you look at the numbers that are registering locally, they're even less than that. And in Chatham, less than half of the number of the state that's kept by the state are registered locally. So, you know, there's a lag there. So it's really hard to get a firm handle on some of those numbers.
Do we know if or how short-term rentals are impacting the availability of year-round housing stocks? Sam, you sort of touched on this, that they're, you know, busy in the summer and then not the in the winter. Is that what we're seeing, you know, same thing on, say, Nantucket, Josh?
Yeah, that's the one of two primary concerns, depending on which side of the sort of anti or at least concerned about STR fence you're on. Is the removal of year-round housing stock from an already extremely limited pool of housing. Houses that are in traditionally residential year-round neighborhoods are being purchased by investors, by summer residents, or in some cases by corporations, and converted into short-term rental properties with pools and outdoor kitchens and entertainment rooms. They can be empty, you know, three quarters of the year. And that house that, again, this is Nantucket. So a house that might have sold for a relatively affordable $1 million is now selling for $3 million as a short-term rental.
Yeah. Which I think it's in the median home price, Josh, on Nantucket, like $4 million right now?
The median is just under four. The average is about 4.5.
Wow.
There is not a single single family home for sale on the market on Nantucket now for probably less than $1.5 million.
Wow.
Where's the Vineyard at?
Not that high, but 1.5 million, I believe is what we last, a lot of money.
Yeah, I think, what Barnesville County, do you know, Tim, isn't it around 700,000 or something like that?
Yeah, 700,000 or 800,000,
Yeah. Is there an argument to be made that short-term rentals are feeding the local economy with visitors and tourists, and who is most vocal in making this pro short-term rental agreement within the different communities?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I think this is kind of the really interesting thing about short-term rentals. If you do live on the island or, you know, the Cape or the Islands, it's expensive to live here. And a lot of homeowners, you know, in order to afford their mortgage, afford to be able to live where they live, they want to use a short-term rental to, you know, provide that income. So really, you got to try to thread the needle. What towns are trying to do is thread that needle of allowing those homeowners to do it, but also not allowing maybe too much or mm-hmm. big corporations or several, you know, someone to own several of these to come in. So I would say, yeah, right. Obviously, and you could also say before the internet was around, maybe not, you know, short-term rental might not have been the term we were using, but, you know, they were renting them.
Seasonal.
Yeah, rent for a week in the summer. It's been going on forever. Mm-hmm. So there's really a push and pull. How do you get in the middle of preserving that while also not getting too overrun with it?
And then just, I think if you're a small business, if you're a restaurant, you're probably thinking, yeah, we want that business. Although we're having trouble staffing some of these small businesses, again, because there's no housing. Tim.
Yeah, and one thing to take into consideration down here, at least in Chatham, over the last decade or so, we've probably lost a couple hundred of hotel rooms to year-round development, turning into condos or single-family mm-hmm. homes. Short-term rentals are taking up that slack a little bit, I think. And another thing to consider is that, at least down here in Chatham, the town includes short-term rentals. Well, they have been included in the room tax on the state level, and of course the towns get a slice of that, and that's brought in, you know, just with the extra money from short-term rentals in the last few years, it's boosted that by over $1 million to the town. So that's revenue that the town is using and is thankful for, really.
Yeah,
we're really looking at it out here on Nantucket in terms of carrying capacity. I don't think there's any question, like we just talked about, that hospitality and summer rentals are the engine that drives a lot of the Cape and Islands economy, and Nantucket's in particular. And more short-term rentals means more visitors, which puts more money in the pockets of a lot of Nantucketers. The question we're asking now, though, is have we reached or exceeded our limit, our carrying capacity? How much is too much?
Right.
Do we really need more visitors, more dollars, or could the economy sort of hum along just fine with a certain reduction in those number of visitors each year? And that's the question we're trying to grapple with now, and that no one's really attempted to get a firm answer on yet. And Tim touched on it too, is that Nantucket about 2 decades ago made a conscious decision, residents and town officials, to shift from a hotel and guest house focused model of hospitality to vacation rentals. What nobody saw, I don't think, though, at the time, certainly, was the creation of online rental platforms. Mm-hmm. And that just caused the vacation rental market to explode, where homeowners found it so much easier. They didn't have to go through a real estate office. They could do everything on their computer. The intent when the town sort of started talking about making it more difficult to build hotels and encouraging vacation rentals was maybe to spread the density out a little bit from the packed downtown area, take a little of the pressure off of a desire to build commercial structures and properties on waterfront areas where they hadn't been before. But with so many people using vacation rentals now, the fear is that it's perhaps spread out a little bit too much, and that sort of dovetails into what we were talking about before with workforce and year-round housing, is that there are entire residential neighborhoods on Nantucket now that are dotted with short-term rental availability that never used to have them before. And you talk about the summer shuffle, you know, it's that window is becoming shorter and shorter, and a lot of homeowners who have short-term rentals are finding it not even worth it to rent long-term in the winter or in the shoulder seasons, because they're making enough money short-term renting and they don't want the hassle of having to get a long-term tenant out, which is a whole other avenue to pursue. That the landlord-tenant laws in Massachusetts are very pro-tenant, which is, you know, most would argue that's probably a good thing, but landlords do find it difficult that they want to start short-term renting in the summer, and their long-term tenants aren't necessarily willing to get out as quickly as they should.
Yeah. Also, I think there's as you guys are talking about, there's people who are trying to just make a little extra income and maybe move out for a month in the summer. I actually know a family that this was last summer. They were going to bring the family camping for a month in a campground and rent their house. It didn't rent. You know, you do all that work, and then I guess for whatever reason, maybe there was a house on the beach that people took instead of the house in this neighbor, you know, suburban neighborhood. But you don't know. You don't know. I mean, if you're going to be able to even get your house rented, right?
Yeah.
All right, we are talking about short-term rentals this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We've invited a roundtable of journalists this morning to shed some light on the short-term rental debate in different communities on the Cape and Islands. With us is Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Paul Benson from the Provincetown Independent, Sam Houghton from Martha's Vineyard Times, and Josh Balling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. If you'd like to chime in, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. There are some communities, especially on the islands, that don't have enough, as we mentioned, hotel room capacity for visitors. Could regulations reducing short-term rentals result in fewer visitors? Josh, I'm sure this is something Nantucket's been talking about.
Sure. And I don't think there's, like I said before, any argument that certainly could be the case. If you eliminate availability, you reduce capacity, and you're going to have potentially fewer rooms and houses available for people to come. So fewer people are potentially going to come. I don't know that you're necessarily going to see them spread out further into the shoulder seasons, and certainly not into the off season. We have a limited window of popularity here in the Cape and Islands, largely given the weather and, you know, and the traditional summering aspect of the way we do things. So I don't think there's any question that if we regulate short-term rentals further, we could potentially see a drop in visitors. But like I'd mentioned before, there are plenty of people, at least on Nantucket, who are ready for that to happen. Yeah. Our economy has never dipped. It actually got stronger during COVID, particularly the real estate market, mm-hmm. The rental market. We bring hundreds and hundreds of service workers and construction workers over on the fast ferry every day to work in the building trades. We are bringing more and more workers over every day to work municipal town functions.
Yeah.
So there's more demand for work than there are people living on Nantucket. So right. If we had a few, you know, those who are in favor of regulation and then perhaps reducing the capacity, some say if we had a few less short-term rentals, we might have a few less people. But how badly would it truly be hurting the year-round Nantucket economy if some of these off-island workers weren't necessarily needed to come over to keep some of this business going?
Yeah. Paul?
Yeah, I don't know about your communities, but on, you know, Provincetown, Truro, Wellfleet, the supply of tourists is well beyond the capacity of what a lot of the restaurants and other retail outlets can support. There is not much of a concern that there's not enough business. There's a concern that the businesses can't be open, and particularly on Tuesday and Wednesday, to capture any of the mm-hmm. tourists who are in town. So, you know, restaurants that are closed 2 days a week in June, July, and August is not a sign of a healthy workforce. They're leaving lots of money in unsold sales because there isn't a workforce available to serve those tourists.
Paul, you bring up an interesting point. I was just thinking, I know somebody who was out there with their family, I can't remember if it was Truro or where, and the wait in the restaurants was so long, they had to, like, you know, go get fast food. That wasn't what they were intending, but they couldn't get in, and they had kids, so, you know, it's not like you can wait until eat at 9 o'clock, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and if the concern is that, you know, the tourist economy needs a certain amount of tourists, that's obviously correct, but it needs a certain amount of workers as well.
Yeah.
And so you hear phrases like balance or out of balance. You know, the idea is not that we don't need short-term rentals in these economies, because we obviously do. The question becomes, is there a balance, and does the town need to act, you know, in town meeting to try to regulate that balance so that in addition to having tourists, you have businesses that can serve them.
Yeah. And these short-term rentals are not being used for any kind of workforce housing, right? I mean, and nobody's heard of any of that. Yeah, everybody's shaking their head now. All right, Shelley.
No, I think that's sort of backwards, actually, the question, not intentionally backwards, but the concern here is that the homes that previously served as workforce housing, either for seasonal employees or year-round families, have been converted into short-term rentals, removing that housing stock from the equation and making them dark when in the past they may have had either summer workers in them or seasonal workers into the fall and in the spring, or year-round families in them all year round. And now they're just sitting dark when they're not being rented a couple of days or a week at a time.
Right. Shelley's giving us a call from Oak Bluffs. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Mindy, and hi, journalist friends. I'm calling with my, I welcome this conversation. It's sorely needed and sorely needs to continue. I'm calling with my real estate broker hat on right now. And in my, experience and long-term observations, I think one of the things that gets overlooked, at least here on Martha's Vineyard, is that most short-term rental landlords are not the big fat, corporate investors, and they're essentially second homeowners who do short-term rentals as a way of offsetting the expense of having their own vacations and getaway places. And I think what gets lost in some of the conversations around affordable housing solutions and long-term rentals is that if you place dire restrictions on short-term rentals, a lot of these homeowners would either say, well, now I can't afford to have my second home. I can't afford to have the happy place, so I'm just going to sell it or not buy one in the first place. Or they're going to just say, well, okay, I'll just use it all the time myself and not rent at all. But it's not the type of investor who's in it just for the money who's going to say, oh, well, if I can't do short-term rentals, then I'll do long-term rentals, and that'll make the affordable housing crisis go away. And I don't think that is going to be a viable, pervasive solution right to the problem here on the island.
Yeah. Shelly, thanks for that perspective. And Sam, you sort of touched on that, saying that you thought that right, this was something a lot of...
I'll be honest. Shelly makes a good point. I will be honest, we haven't done like a in-depth story on how many of these are corporate-owned, how many of these are landlords. So we don't necessarily know. But I was covering West Tisbury Town Meeting when this regulation came up. And it was changed on town meeting floor because residents in the audience in West Tisbury said, hold on, I rent short-term rental. This is really unfair to me. I want to preserve that ability to do it. I think it's kind of one of those things. And Nantucket, I think, might be well ahead of the Vineyard on this, but it takes a framing, bringing the community together. What do we want to do? Mm-hmm. Do we want to say no to short-term rentals completely? I don't think the Vineyard wants to do that. I don't think that Nantucket wants to do that either. But I think you try to find a balance, and the Vineyard is starting to get into that conversation. I think Nantucket might be a little further along in it.
I think Nantucket's got the benefit.
I might.
Josh, let me just say the thing with Nantucket is you guys, you're one town, right? And where the Vineyard's right, got a lot of different perspectives.
And make it differ only in the sense that we may have started the conversation 4 or 5 years ago, but except for the corporate ownership consensus, we are no closer to a solution than we've ever been before. There are so many diverse opinions and so many stakeholders in this entire debate that it's taken, I think, far longer than a lot of people thought it would, even to get to the ban on corporate ownership. That was what most people would agree was the lowest hanging fruit of the low hanging fruit. And it took 3 years to even get there. We've got a special town meeting coming up in the fall where we've got 4 new proposals that have come out of this last town meeting where we were only able to get the corporate ownership ban. Following up on, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly, the land court decision, which set some guardrails or kind of set the playing field for what might happen moving forward. But we on Nantucket have been talking about this for at least 5 years, and we're not that much further ahead than you guys are.
Paula's giving us a call from Eastham. Hi, Paula.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a former real estate broker from off Cape and I now live here full time, but I've been coming to the Cape. My parents built a home on the bay back in the 1950s. So I'm very familiar with the history in this area. Several points. I think that combining the regulatory concerns of the islands of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard with the rest of the Cape is a bit... I think it throws the whole skew off of details. I think that I'm not familiar with as much of the problems in pricing and all of the islands, but I think that they should be separate and not used as a comparison to most of the Cape. I can speak for Eastham, where I would say that 80% of the rentals, short-term rentals done here are owned by individual property owners who have, many of them from years ago, did the same thing. They want to retire here. In the meantime, before they can be here full time, they rent in the summers to offset the costs while their kids are getting through college and so forth. And this is not into the majority of the rentals are not utilizing the the corporate structure.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is that I'm being an old real estate person, but out of the business now. I hope that some of the concerns that are being brought up to the townspeople are not just brought forward by the real estate market, because I am sure that the realtors down here, when people are renting individually themselves and are not selling their properties because they're trying to hold on to them to retire to, I think there is a shortage of real estate business to be had. Especially, we've seen this with the multiple offers, and it probably is not as lucrative, although the properties sell quickly and so forth. But I'm just saying that I just wonder, again, whether some of the complaints about short-term rentals, is it because some parts of industry is not making, doing business or having availability?
Right.
My last point is that is very concerning, and is that most of the decision making that happens at town meeting is done by the people who live here year round, and I'm one of those, and I agree. But I do feel very strongly that the ownership by people who are unable to vote in town meetings. I hope that all the towns have non-resident taxpayers associations so that their input is important. Their tax base to the community is the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. When these rules come through, I feel that...
Paula, you're breaking up, but we get your point. And Paul, you want to respond?
Yeah, I think some of those points are really well made. It is definitely the case that, corporate ownership or, holdings of 2 or 3 or 4 or 12 short-term rentals is by far a minority part of the market. 80, 85, in some cases, 90% are, in fact, owned by individuals or sometimes people who have two. Maybe they rent out their main house and a secondary cottage, and that counts as two, or they rent out their main house and one across town. But there aren't a lot of cases yet. So when we regulate these things about corporate ownership and ownership of many, we're regulating a very small part of the market, maybe 10%.
Yeah. Tim?
Yeah, I think one thing to piggyback on what Paul said and the caller as well. Years ago, I remember when my family came to the Cape for vacations, we would go through a local realtor to rent a place. And now we don't have to do that anymore. And I think that's taken away business from local realtors. And I think that's a concern. There are a lot of summer rentals that go through realtors still. But as you said before, if it's easy just to jump on Airbnb and with a couple clicks of the mouse, you rented a place in Chatham, Harwich, or Nantucket. That's changed the market a lot.
Yeah, and she also talks about voices, and I kind of feel like we are hearing from a lot. It's not just the real estate folks. You were at West Tisbury Town Meeting. I mean, there are lots of voices being heard at these town meetings.
Mean, I think she makes a great point, but I think there's a lot of information that we don't know, and maybe get a pitch out there. If anyone wants to give us a grant to investigate it, we'll gladly take it. But it's really hard. And one point we could make, some of these corporations might find loopholes where they hide in LLC, shadow company. We don't necessarily know.
Yeah, right. Talk to Christian, who's giving us a call from Barnstable. Hi, Christian.
Hi, how is everybody doing this morning?
Great.
Thank you. I was heavily involved in the push for short-term rental regulation in Barnstable. This was a couple of years ago. And a couple takeaways from that, having chased up the data, the corporate ownership's a boogeyman. It's not real. It is less than 1% Cape-wide.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, the next boogeyman is crime, although you guys haven't talked about that, but the perception of parties and whatnot, which in this day and age would be settled with a cell phone video, the point of the fact of the matter is, though, that we're missing the most important topic here. The first topic is the main benefactor of short-term rentals is the town and the people of the town. The 14% tax levied on the revenue goes to the wastewater treatment system, and if we're going to settle that problem, we're the only way funding it. So we need to recognize that people aren't making money. There's no fat cat laughing their way to the bank at the end of this, because the amount of time and effort to manage any of these properties is extraordinary. The second thing is with regard to the difference, with regard to the perception that these short-term rentals might then go to long-term rentals. At some point, if that is the perception, or maybe even the reality, we have to incentivize those long-term rentals. I've seen many times long-term renters destroy homes, and I have plenty of friends, family, and otherwise that have put their foot down and said, "I'll never do long-term again," because it took 6 months to get the people out. When COVID happened, they ended up having to lose the property because they couldn't afford the maintenance and the mortgage with people not paying. It is a nightmare for the average hustler of mid-age who was able to sock away enough money to get that second property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Christian, thanks for the call. Really good points. I think that's interesting, the incentivizing long-term rentals. That's an interesting concept. As anybody, hands are going by. I'll start with you, Paul, and then go to you.
Yeah, that's
go
actually
ahead.
Something
ahead,
we're starting to do out here.
Yeah.
But I guess I could just jump in and say, with all due respect to the caller, at least on Nantucket, there are plenty of people making money hand over fist on short-term rentals.
Yeah.
And that sort of goes to the secondary question of capacity.
Yeah.
And how much is too much.
Right.
But to jump back into your question there, we have started a number of programs on Nantucket. There's one already in place that was started by a group called Act Now, which has really been driving the short-term rental debate from the beginning, going all the way back 5 years or so, which basically incentivizes property owners to rent year-round instead of short-term. It's a pure cash incentive. They developed a formula based on the number of bedrooms and number of occupants, in an attempt to make up the difference or largely make up the difference between what a property owner, a landlord would get for a short-term rental versus a year-round rental. It's just wrapped up its first year of a pilot program, was able to give away all the money it had, about $350,000. And we actually have a story in today's paper. They're entering their second year and they're looking to partner with both the island's largest nonprofit attainable housing agency and the town to expand the program and make it larger. Our select board member, Dawn Hill Holgate, has also proposed a similar proposal that would encourage property owners to put deed restrictions on their homes for year-round housing, and again, paying a monetary incentive that would be tied to that deed restriction. To keep it year-round instead of selling to a potential short-term investor or summer resident.
All right. Paul?
Yeah, the relationship between long-term rentals and short-term rentals is a really interesting one, because on the one hand, you see the dramatic decline in long-term rentals in U.S. census data for any town, over the last 20 years. In Provincetown, it's about a third as many long-term rentals as we had in the year 2000, back when owners and renters were about two balanced categories in the year 2000. And now at one point, there were less than about 330 rental properties in the entire town. So, and yet everyone will point out that there's a ratchet effect and it's not going to go backwards. The die is already cast, and these short-term rentals won't become long-term rentals again in the presence of regulation. So we have the same incentive conversation here. We use the same program that Act Now took on, except here it's funded by our short-term rental tax revenue. We put about $350,000 aside to try to monetarily induce people to turn their short-term rental into a long-term rental. They've had some success with that program. They've had a lot of interest. There is the sense that owners feel that is speaking their language in a way that regulations are not. So the critical reception of that program has been very different from regulatory efforts. And there are other efforts in Provincetown to incentivize long-term rentals. We do allow our residential tax exemption to apply if the renter is a resident as opposed to the owner. So that's a new sort of innovation. It hasn't been taken up that widely yet. Mm-hmm. It's only worth about $2,000 or $3,000 on an average property. So it's not, going to compete with short-term rental revenues, but it's the start of trying to say, well, maybe, being a landlord and being you know, having a long-term tenant, that used to be thought of as a business, and it's almost charity work at this point when there's so much money to be made in short term. Right. So yeah. The idea that the government would support and sort of set long-term renting as a policy choice it wants to support with policies of its own is sort of just taking shape here.
Yeah, Tim.
Yeah, to follow up on that, there's been some pushback on that concept here. This past town meeting, there was a petition article to adopt the same sort of program that that Paul was just talking about, and Chatham voters postponed it. So I think there's a little bit of skepticism of the idea of using public funds to incentivize these year-round rentals, especially with deed restrictions. I think there's that program needs a little more fleshing out, at least for it to be accepted down in this part of the Cape.
We're talking about short-term rentals. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We've invited a roundtable of journalists this morning to shed some light on the short-term rental debate in different communities on the Cape and Islands. With us is Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Paul Benson from Provincetown Independent, Sam Houghton from Martha's Vineyard Times, and Josh Balling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Janet is calling from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Janet.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I kept getting these things in the mail from Airbnb, and so finally I called them up and told them to stop sending them. They wanted my house and to go into that kind of business with them, and I said they would save some postage in their time. I don't like the idea of a rental business. If someone, a family wants to rent their house in the summer, that's okay with me. However, you know, nobody's ever talked about how it affects the composition of your neighborhood. You know, I live in a place where there's five houses, and everybody is, they're not necessarily living here year-round, but they don't rent their houses out. And, you know, I can see what it does to a neighborhood, and I don't want any part of it. Mm. And a lot of people have offered to buy my house, not only Airbnb and those kind of people, or get into some kind of business relationship with them. And, you know, I said, well, where am I going to go, you know? And I have an acre and a half of land and a small house, which is nice. But I just don't like the whole idea of the whole scale renting of houses in general. And the Vineyard has said so many changes, you know, since I was here.
Janet.
It's impossible to deal with.
Yeah. Janet, thank you for sharing your thoughts. We appreciate that. And thanks for the phone call. We've got an email from Matt in Orleans. He says, I think there are two different topics here. One, people renting their houses. What's the problem here? The Cape is expensive. My summer rentals allow me to live here. I take great care in keeping my house ready for renters, updated, clean. I register with the town. The town gets great tax revenue from this. Two, the summer shuffle, the housing crisis. What does renting houses for the summer months have to do with an overall housing crisis? Town and gifts have land banks. I know some towns have a land bank tax. How about a housing tax so the town could buy houses and have some sort of grant situation with small business owners? Can Massachusetts legislature draft a bill so when we hire teachers, police officers to live and work year-round in seasonal towns, there's a bonus to help them with housing? He says he's a little annoyed that the housing crisis is an ongoing story. Let's solve it. He challenges each of the journalists here today to come up with three ideas to tackle this. Talk to other seasonal towns, skiing areas, et cetera. Get business, you know. And Josh, you did this. You guys did a thing on what other
what
communities
we did.
Are doing. Talk about that.
And I would like to say he's spot on. We on Nantucket would like him and everyone else to put some pressure on the legislature. The housing so-called housing bank bill, the real estate transfer fee bill that Nantucket sent up over a decade ago, and that Provincetown was in the early years on as well. Was left out of the governor's housing bond bill again by the Senate Ways and Means Committee. It got farther this year than it ever did before, but it's off the table because what most people argue is a very strong real estate lobby that doesn't want to see it happen. So legislative solutions have been proposed that, you know, we're looking at, a 2% transfer fee on sales over the median home price, which would on Nantucket anyway, probably generate $5 to $10 million a year to address our affordable housing issues. We have already as a community stepped up at the last three or four town meetings and appropriated over $60 million for affordable housing initiatives, including a $6.5 million a year permanent override to fund affordable housing projects. Mm-hmm. But at the state level, even though it's an opt-in, it doesn't seem to really have any more traction. It seems to be considered a regional issue that we supposedly, I guess, can take care of on our own. I don't want to sound a little too strident about it, but you know, that's the case. We've been fighting this battle on the Cape and Islands for about a decade now, and not really getting much satisfaction at the state level.
Yeah, Paul?
PAHO has a program that I talk about anytime I have a chance, where half of all new construction has to be deed restricted to year-round occupancy, which is defined as you're working in the county. There are some provision for disability or caretakers. And it just means that as the new units come online, they don't all go into the Airbnb market. Half of them have to be reserved, you know, and you're still going to make money because you're creating units. Now, there's not a ton of new construction on the Cape and Islands, but there's some. Mm-hmm. And it sure would be interesting if half of the new construction were being set aside for the people who keep the economy running.
Anybody else have thoughts on that? Go ahead.
Sam. Yeah, just this week, and Josh was talking a little bit about the Senate bill that came out. There was no transfer fee, which would basically... Right. But in that bill, there is a seasonal communities designation that would help the islands, likely the Cape as well. And one provision in there is allowing homeowners, I believe landowners, to set their house as deed restricted for a year-round house. So mm-hmm. you could essentially, the law would allow you to do that, say, this can only be sold to someone living here year-round.
Mm-hmm. Tim, you want to add anything? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, Nantucket and Provincetown seem to be always sort of in the vanguard on these issues. The rest of us down here on this part of the Cape have followed. Chatham's submitted those similar legislative requests, and they haven't gone anywhere. But a major impediment to getting these affordable housing issues in front of you know, implemented is, you know, going to town meeting and overcoming the still obstacles that are in the way of putting together affordable housing projects. Chatham has two in the works right now, and there's been a lot of pushback from residents. And I think part of that is financial, and part of it is, again, you know, the same things that come up with affordable housing projects all the time, not in my backyard right. type of thing.
Yeah. Josh, you mentioned we sort of touched on the land court decision in March. Talk a little bit about that. This is one of the legal challenges to short-term rentals.
Sure. And it's a case specific to Nantucket, but it could probably be considered precedent setting, much like the Styler case kind of kicked all this off a few years ago. A land court judge ruled that short-term rentals cannot be the primary use of properties in residential zones, but they can be accessory uses. But he stopped short of specifically defining for the community what that is. This particular case, he sent it back to the Zoning Board of Appeals to make that ruling and implied basically that the town needs to come up with those definitions on its own. And if it wants to avoid these kind of legal disputes in the future, incorporate something into its zoning bylaw that really sort of defines primary and accessory use. And it's not as easy a definition as it might sound on the surface. It really depends on what side of the fence you sit on. It sounds pretty simple, but primary use, you would just think that it would be you spend more time in your home than you don't. But this particular case that got remanded back to the Zoning Board of Appeals, the defendants are arguing that even the time they don't spend in their home should be considered occupancy because they could if they wanted to, or they may make a decision at the last minute to come down and use their house. So therefore, that should be counted as occupancy. And if that kind of precedent gets set, then any property on Nantucket or arguably elsewhere could be considered a primary use to short-term rent when you're not there, if yeah. you get credit for the time that you're not there. Yeah. It's sort of a circular argument, but it has some kind of perverse logic to it.
Right. And how you define, you know, what the short-term... Wes Tisbury has come up with some
yeah.
guidelines here, right?
Yeah. I will say it passed a town meeting. It still hasn't gone through the AG yet. But the one, you know, there's a lot to it and it's creating kind of registry. But I think the big takeaway that kind of deals with this whole idea of corporations or, you know, someone owning several of these properties, there's an interesting part of the bylaw that would say you have to live in the house for 30 days in order to use a short-term rental. There was You know, it's interesting that came up at town meeting, and there was not that much debate about it. A lot of the residents were, yeah, that's fine by me. And I think that does deal with that big problem of saying, you know, you have a, you know, corporation come in. Right. They don't you can't have the owner of the corporation live there. I think the question of enforcement is another question.
Right.
We don't have to get into that, but
That's another show, right? So just looking at what other communities are doing, Josh, the Inquiry Mirror looked at that, right? You looked around at what other communities are doing for short-term. It's different for everybody.
From small communities, similar resort-sized communities to Nantucket, all the way up to major cities and major resort communities like in Hawaii, Charleston, and elsewhere. And it really runs the gamut on everything from geographically or zoning district-wise, outright banning short-term rentals in some districts, capping the number of nights a year a property can be rented, requiring a minimum stay, and we also found a few communities that that are not necessarily grappling with the same issues we are and are actively pushing for short-term rentals because they might be in something of a little bit of an economic downturn and they need the revenue. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's really different communities attack it different ways. All the proposals that have come to the last four town meetings on Nantucket have generally touched on different parts of or different, you know, segments of these proposals, whether, again, it is a cap on the number of nights, a limit on the number of rentals in a season. One of the things we haven't really addressed here is any kind of geographical or zoning prohibition on short-term rentals. There's been no suggestion about, say, banning them from the downtown historic district mm-hmm. or from certain zoning districts. That doesn't seem to have any traction. But getting back to the primary versus secondary use argument for a second, a number of proposals have basically said you can rent short-term rent your property up to, you know, one day less than the number of days you stay in the home. Mm. So if you stay in the home for 2 months, you could rent it for a month and 29 days. If you stay in your house for 2 weeks, you could rent it for a week and 6 days. Mm. They haven't necessarily gained that much traction either, but they're all proposals that are out there and will probably be discussed in some way, shape, or form when our special town meeting rolls around again in September.
Yep. Paul?
I just find it interesting that there isn't a consistent approach across many of the jurisdictions that have struggled with this, and it feels like reinventing the wheel every time, which is a bit of a challenge because governments want to know that they're following best practices. You know, their first question is, well, who else has done this? When Provincetown passed its two measures on corporate ownership and limiting to two per owner, they were taken up almost immediately by Truro and Eastham and passed there as well because they sort of had the tires kicked and they mm-hmm. felt safe to go forward with. You know, jurisdictions don't mind copying each other. They like it. And the fact that there's not been, across, Maui and New Orleans and all these other places, Palm Springs, you look at Portland, they're all different. And that, I think, actually contributed to the difficulty of getting anything passed.
Yeah. Tim, got a minute left. You get the final word.
All I was going to say was that, it's been tough down at this end of the Cape to get those regulations in place. Brewster rejected it at their town meeting. They rejected articles related to regulating short-term rentals, while Chatham, Harwich, and Orleans do have regulations for registration and very, very minor code type things. And there's been no moves down this end of the Cape for banning corporate ownership or any of the things that Paul talked about. We'll see if that happens. This summer may be the test if it's really busy and there's a lot of people piling into these short-term summer rentals. Well, we may see some pushback.
Yeah. Well, so more to come. Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Paul Benson from the Provincetown Independent, Sam Houghton from the Martha's Vineyard Times, and Josh Bolling from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Thank you all. Thanks for sharing your expertise on this. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.